is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person just keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life, I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Unapologetically Black Podcast. I am really excited about this episode because we are being joined by someone who is going to talk to us about Black women and maternal health and the maternal health crisis that's going on that is disproportionately affecting Black women and other minorities. But, you know, this is the Unapologetically Black Podcast, so we're always going to focus on our community. So we, Shan and I, are welcoming Jamila Carey.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jamila, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then Shan and I will start unloading all of our questions about how scared we are to give birth?
Sure. So I'm Dr. Jamila Carey. I'm actually a psychiatrist. I work as a consultant in the West London Triborough Perinatal Mental Health Team. So we're a team that supports women during pregnancy and in the first 2 years after delivering with their mental health.
Amazing. And I have to ask this question before we get stuck in. I'm guessing that you're based in London.
Yes, yes. I'm based in West London. Specifically, I work in Ealing, but our service covers Ealing, Hammersmith and Fulham and Hounslow.
And you are raised in the UK. What's your journey to getting involved with the NHS?
You can probably hear from my accent, I was not raised in this country. I have a long and torturous history, but I will summarize by saying that I'm Canadian by birth, but West Indian by descent, and now British as my adopted third country. So my mom's Trinidadian, my dad's from Bermuda. We grew up in Canada and then in Bermuda, and then I came here to do A-levels and stayed.
Amazing.
Do you know, you are the second Trinidadian guest we've had on recently. Our last Ooh. Guest was also Trinidadian and also had an American accent. Despite being born and raised, I believe she said, from memory, in Reddit. So I don't know what's going on here, yes. Guys. We are an inclusive space. And you can join us if you're from other parts of, you know, the continent. That's fine. But Dr. Jamila, I wanted to ask you, so before we started recording, Leanne touched on the fact that we're both scared to be mums, okay? And you said you're like the third person in the room as well when it comes to that, you can relate to that experience. So I think it will be nice just for like the people listening for us to kind of talk about where our fears come from. So for me, if I start, my fears around motherhood previously was actually about making the right decisions for my child's father, because I had a really up and down relationship with my dad and I kind of had that fear of repeating the script in that way. I don't have that fear anymore. I'm very clear on who I am and I know I'll make the best decision that I can at that time. Now my fear is more just around like genuinely delivering a baby. I think I've seen a few snippets on YouTube, on TikTok, on all these sites, and it just looks so painful. And I'm like, why does someone want to go through that? Like, why do I want my vagina hole to stretch in that way? And I know it's a really beautiful experience. You know, many people go on to have more than one child. My mum's got four. Some people have 8, 12, and so forth. But for me, like, that is horrifying.
Yeah, it's scary. I think when you really stop and think about it, it is absolutely jaw-droppingly scary. But I think it's interesting because you talked about kind of fear of kind of being good enough in a psychological sense, or like practically having the means to support a child, having the community, the partnership. And I don't know, I'm not sure if I've come across as many people that take that into consideration as they do the physical side of it, which was the second thing you mentioned. So I think most people are very aware of kind of physically what roughly what it takes to bring a child into the world. And, you know, until you become pregnant, that seems like a really weird, freaky prospect, and losing your agency, your bodily autonomy, particularly for Black women, which we'll probably come back to. But that feels like, you know, something that quite difficult to contemplate until you're in that position where you become pregnant. But I think for both reasons, it's worrisome. I think that we may have some instinctual fear of being vulnerable with health professionals in that space when you're laboring. And there may be kind of racial aspects to that, you know, systemic racism, institutionalized racism, that kind of contributes perhaps to Black women and our peers being a little bit more conscious of what it might feel like to be in that situation, and therefore being a bit more fearful of it. So I think some of these things are really rational.
With the physical aspect, some of what I always say this to Shan, or I always say this to my girlfriends who do have children, I'm like, we don't talk about the nitty gritty nature of birth enough. Like, I don't know. I know, you know, the baby's here, but I don't know if my girlfriends tore or not, whether they had a midwife or if they had a doula or if they, you know, what their OBGYN experience was like. And so for me, in addition to the physical aspect of it, I think, you know, as an advocate who is somewhat informed about the issues, I'm always worried about like going in and experiencing firsthand what so many other women tell me about their experiences walking into, you know, the doctor and having an OBGYN who is, you know, or having an institutionalized, an institutionally racialized experience, and not being able to advocate for myself, even though I have all the knowledge, because there is something that happens when you have, I feel like, you know, when you're, there's risk and you want to do the best for your child and you think you know what's best, but then someone is telling you that actually this is the better option, and how to navigate like that process without, potentially without a partner. In some instances, many women have to do it as single women.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, during COVID. And so a lot of my fear is like literally just having a baby in the wrong place. Like, where is the safest place to have a baby in the world for a Black woman? You know, that's a real question for me.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that it's one that more and more women are asking, because there is a little bit more consciousness, a little bit more awareness around some of the kind of outcome gaps between people from various backgrounds, be they on racialized grounds, be they kind of socioeconomically. So I think it's kind of like a question that is cropping up a lot. And I think when there have been, you know, the pressures on society, like we've seen with COVID, you know, post-Brexit with some economic downturn, it really affects people at the most important points in their life, like that moment between life and death when you're bringing a child into the world. So I think that these questions are more and more cropping to the surface, and partly also because of the advocacy of really great Black women who have been through, you know, complicated or difficult labor and delivery experiences and have decided to kind of create some sisterhood and shout about what has been going on.
Mm-hmm. What is one of your fears, Jamilo?
Ooh, getting personal now. I mean, I guess I know about all the things that can go wrong. So I have the curse of being a medical professional in that sense. And kind of, you know, you tend to be a little bit of a hypochondriac, and any small symptom, any small twinge, you know, the range of potential complications and outcomes goes through your mind. So that is something that like makes me very, very aware of, like, if I were to become pregnant at my particular age, you know, all the kind of potential complications that could occur. I think you do fear losing control and just being in a space where you absolutely as you mentioned, you rely on others, even as a health professional like myself. When I'm a patient, and I don't know what's necessarily know what's best for me. I don't have all the specialist background knowledge in that particular area, and I have to trust other people. And so I think there is definitely a fear about that. They kind of joke and say that doctors and nurses, you know, you never see them unless they're desperately ill. We don't like being in that vulnerable position. And we know through our patients how, you know, vicariously how it feels.
And out of interest, do you see the fears that we've kind of discussed among us? Like, is that quite common, even for mums who are expecting to have a baby?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, a lot of people have planned for a pregnancy and, you know, it's something they've wanted for a long time. And regardless of that, how wanted the baby is, the actual practicalities of getting to the place where you have a baby in your arms, it's such a big life event, it's such a big hurdle, and people do come to us really scared. There's kind of like fears that are within the sort of what we would call normal range, and then there are the more phobic fears of delivering, so there's actually a condition called tocophobia, which means morbid fear of giving birth. And that's, so that's a diagnosable condition. And through our work, we do see some ladies with that condition, and they're offered specific support with specialist midwives who have some experience. And it's really important for us to talk about birth choices and options for labor and delivery early, and to allow people to make the decision. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but a lot of people don't realize that you can advocate for yourself in terms of whether you'd like a C-section or to have a vaginal delivery. I think people sometimes don't realize that. Sometimes they feel pressured from family members, from friends, from, you know, influences in the media, or even from their midwives themselves. They perceive that there's pressure to deliver vaginally. There are definitely additional risks associated with C-sections compared to vaginal deliveries. And that is something that your midwife and your obstetrician is obliged to talk with you about and, you know, may say to you, like, on the face of it, given your particular history and physical condition, we think a vaginal delivery would be much safer for you. That's fair. But it's important to consider your mental health in all of this as well, and consider how, you know, how you perceive a delivery might be and which type of delivery might work better for you based on your previous experiences, perhaps trigger warning, previous assaults, experience of not having control regarding, you know, sexual autonomy. And so going through a labor where you're having, you know, you're already in pain, and then you may have quite be conscious of a lot of people attention on your kind of vaginal area, people needing to do intimate examinations. You know, that can play a real part in whether actually the best what's in your best interest.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. My godson's mom, she had a C-section when she had him. She's now luckily about to have her second baby like a year later, and she's advocated for herself to have a C-section again, just based on the experience that she had. But I never thought of it, primarily because it doesn't relate to her experience, but I never actually thought about the impact or the link between like sexual abuse or sexual assault and how that could maybe impact your choices when it comes to delivery. So I wanted to ask, are there any other like deciding factors that might come into play why someone may be indecisive about which option they're going to go for, similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think previous experiences of surgery can also play a part. So conversely, sometimes people will come into it feeling really sure that they don't want to have a C-section and wanting to be able to avoid that at all costs, perhaps because there has been a previous surgical experience that didn't go so well. And again, I think that's fair. And, you know, the hope is that your professionals will really listen to the experiences that you have, your rationale, that you're given the opportunity for a start to discuss and explain what your thinking is and what your rationale is that is behind your kind of choices and preferences, and that they can kind of talk through with you, okay, based on kind of what's happening physically for you, this is what we would recommend. Because of your history and kind of the you know, what your life experience that you're carrying, we'll take it into consideration. We might be able to shift and change things, and ultimately we want the safest experience for you, both physically and mentally.
And you know, you're a Black woman. We've just talked about all of the fears that we each individually have. But being in a position working in the role that you are, you also have a direct insight as to how those fears and views inform, you know, how we're addressing maternal mental health as an institution or kind of systematically. So can you talk a little bit about some of the services that are on offer from pregnancy and actually post-pregnancy? So through that kind of perinatal period, like supporting women who have just given birth, or yeah, what are the kinds of services that you're able to build out based on the fears that you're seeing women?
Yeah, that's such a great question, and it's still evolving. But I guess it's helpful to just talk briefly about what we refer to as universal services. So things who are available to everybody and should be available to everybody regardless of their background. So when you book in your pregnancy, you should be having quite a long appointment, initial appointment with your midwife. At that appointment, there is a section about kind of social aspects, talking about kind of like, what is your situation with the father of the baby, if they're in your life, or the donor. Trying to understand whether you are safe where you are physically, where you are in your accommodation with your partner, thinking about what they need to be aware of to help you to maintain your safety if there is something of concern. And similarly, talking about your mental health and how you're feeling about the pregnancy and what previous experiences of mental ill health you may have had in the past, which could influence the pregnancy and your postnatal period. So if there's something that you share, and it is your choice to share it at that appointment, then that's an opportunity for your midwife to signpost you to a particular service, which may be your GP to suggest a conversation with them. It may be to one of the primary care talking therapy services, or it may be to a secondary care mental health team, such as the one I work in. And throughout the whole of England, there are specialist perinatal mental health services. So you can actually be referred to a specialist team that only works with birthing people who are pregnant or postnatal.
Amazing. And I guess, I don't know how long these services have been in place, but do you see women paying attention to their mental health during pregnancy? Because I think, as you pointed out, and as Jan said, the physical is so at the forefront of our brains. Yeah,
absolutely. You've just opened a huge can of worms because I think there's so many elements to think about when we are talking about that question. I would start by saying that I think motherhood, what it means to be a mother and how you prepare yourself for motherhood, really varies depending on your own experience of being mothered and on your own cultural background. In a lot of cases, there is an assumption that motherhood and mental ill health don't really align. They're not connected.
Is that because people put a lot of pressure on motherhood to be this like amazing grand thing that's really positive that everyone's been working towards? So that's why people don't see the disconnect that actually for some people can have the opposite effect.
100%. 100%. I think there are ideas that we sort of elevate mothers to these sacrificial, blissful beings who kind of float above it all, regardless of what's happening in their life, regardless of pressures. They are perfect and all seeing, all knowing, all loving all the time. And to have any cracks in that facade is considered to be really shameful, and causes a lot of guilt. So I think at the heart of it, people know about stigma regarding mental health in general, but there's an additional element of stigma that comes with having a mental health issue when you're pregnant or have children, which I think we're only just starting to acknowledge. And I guess misogyny comes into that a little bit as well.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about like influencers. Yeah. And I think it's quite interesting because there's a lot of influencers that I follow that are now parents, and they say things like, oh yeah, on reflection, I think I had postnatal depression. And I think that when I ever hear people talk about their experiences with postnatal depression, it's always like, I think I had it.
Yes.
I think I had it. It's never like I had it. And I feel like from the outside looking in, it kind of goes back to that point again of like, maybe there was a level of rejection of the idea that they had that when they were being a mom because of guilt that they didn't want to actually like deal with it at the time and navigate it at the time.
Totally.
And I think when I speak to people who I know that are moms, particularly young moms, what I find to be quite common is this idea of like loneliness. Mm. And I was watching this TikTok the other day. I love TikTok, the clock app. And on the TikTok, this girl was saying, like, when you get pregnant, all your friends are at the baby shower and they all say to you, like, I'm going to be the godmom, I'm going to be this. And then you have the baby and nobody's there. And she was talking about her experience of isolation. And I then decided to talk to my cousin who's recently had a baby, who I actually haven't gone to visit yet.
Ironically.
And I was like, ironically. And I said to her, like, oh, like, what's your experience of, like, isolation? Like, do you genuinely feel like nobody's there? Because everyone keeps saying this. So if everyone's saying this, then I wonder if you've experienced it. And she was like, no, it is. Mm. And I'm like, what for you is isolating? And she was like, you know, all your friends, they want to go to the club. They want to go out. They want to have drinks. They want to do all these things that you're just not in the, you don't have the capacity to do right now. That's not the season that you're aligned with. And then because of that, you kind of end up isolating yourself. And people will say like, oh yeah, I'm going to come around, and I don't come around. So I say that to say, like, with your experience and like in the department that you work in, how common is loneliness as an issue amongst new moms?
It's a massive, massive issue. I want to start by saying that you referred to people talking about, oh, I think I had, and using the past tense to describe their postnatal depression or whatever it was that was the mental health issue. And what we really need to try and move and shift towards is a position where we're starting to talk about it in the present tense, because that's when we can do something about it. And that's when you can be like a powerful image for other people to feel confident to also come forward at the time. It's really interesting because we actually, in our team, we have kind of like a diversity and inclusion working group. We kind of set ourselves up. We're just volunteers, basically staff members who had an interest in it. And one of the first things that we did when we got together was to start to talk with some of our service users. We call them experts by experience when they kind of come back to the service and work with us to develop our kind of the provision, the care that we're offering more to suit, you know, what would have suited them at the time and what would suit them better now. So we kind of brought together some of our experts by experience, and we just had an honest conversation about, what do you think were the barriers to you seeking help? Why, you know, if there was a delay, why was there a delay? And a lot of them talked about not realizing that other people went through what they had been through, feeling very isolated in the experience. And partly that's because they were physically isolated, away from friends and family sometimes, but also because there was this kind of like veil of, you know, a need to present a positive face, a need to be seen to be coping, which meant that whenever they or their family members were in the postnatal period, they didn't feel comfortable talking about their difficulties. And it was only once they were through them and out of them that these conversations could start to happen. And suddenly it's like you turn around and, oh my God, everybody's been through this.
So much of the work that we do is trying to share authentically about things that we are going through at, you know, on our platform without necessarily having the answers to them. You know, there is something to be said about sharing something that you don't have the answers for and saying, hey, I'm going through this and I need help, or, you know, is anyone else going through this? And then women who, or other people who are going through the same thing, may be able to say, I'm also struggling with this, and collectively we can figure out how to sort it out. And so I'm really glad that you said, like, you know, speaking about it as if we're in the present, because oftentimes when you think, oh, I think I had this, it's like, well, where did it go? You know, what did you do to deal with this? It didn't just magically disappear. And obviously there may be lingering effects, or, you know, you're more susceptible to go through it the next time you give birth. And, you know, I feel like there's so much burden on women to figure everything out, right? Figure out whether or not you want to have a C-section. And yes, of course, you have the support of doctors and midwives and so on. But I guess in your experience, how important is it for family members to play a role in supporting, you know, new-to-be parents, whether that's the dad or the, you know, or family members, moms, cousins, aunts, uncles, etc.?
I mean, family can be such a double-edged sword. In an but it's true, right? In an ideal world, you know, community is everything, and you want to have people around you who you trust, who can, who will give weight to your concerns, validate them, and support you in a way that it will be helpful to you. But not everybody has that. And it's okay. I think it's important for people to know that it's okay not to have the kind of fictionalized, idealized family, you know, two sets of grandparents, you know, a partner, a husband, whatever, a dog, picket fence before you get pregnant. That's not real life for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. And it's okay. But it's important that the people that are around, that are around you, recognize when you're not well, and can be a protective factor and a stabilizing factor through that. And a lot of times they can't be that if you haven't shared what it is that you're struggling. And sometimes they can't be that because they themselves have never come to terms with the trauma that they suffered.
Yeah, I think that comment's quite interesting, actually, because I think especially within like Black communities, sometimes having too much support can have a negative impact, because I feel like some parents or grandparents, they want to like input a lot of their values, a lot of their ways of doing things, and sometimes actually outdated. Like some of the methods or ways people approach parenting is not in the same way that we need to now, because there's new inventions, there's better quality like things that are going on. Do you get what I mean? So I think you're right about trying to find that balance.
Yeah, you are hitting so many points before I can even get to them. This issue about the like cultural disconnect between generations and how we parent is such a big factor, especially in, you know, families and cultures where we, you know, traditionally show a lot of respect to the elders. There are grandparents who are very involved, who may have raised us themselves, but they're two generations back in terms of what, you know, what they did. And, you know, they'll turn around and say to you, well, I raised you, you know, you're fine, type of thing. Where we respect and we appreciate our elders for what they've done for us, but we also are a little bit more aware of our emotional landscape than they might have been. And there has been a lot more research into the children's emotional development, and things that actually are maybe not so helpful for them, that were kind of staples of the past. So it's really difficult when you're trying to manage kind of like your parents or in-laws or grandparents, who have a really different, you know, way of wanting to parent. And sometimes being able to kind of set some boundaries is really important, and it's valid.
Do Do you have any examples of some of those like changes that have happened?
I think one of the most common ones is about picking up a baby and or holding a baby too much. The idea that if you don't put the baby down, you know, even when they're very young, like, you know, first few weeks or first few months after they're delivered, that if you're holding the baby most of the time as the mother, that you are creating a clingy or weak child. What we know now is that for the baby, they don't really understand for quite some months that they're a separate entity to you. And actually that closeness is so important to their emotional development and to them being able to learn, you know, feeling safe, and from a position of feeling safe, being able to learn and develop. So this thing about, you know, you're holding the baby too much, put the baby down, you know, let the baby learn to fall asleep on their own. Yes, there's a time and a place for that, but it's not in the first few weeks and months of life. So yeah, that's a big one that we come up against a lot.
Can I just say that this is not only limited to grandparents and moms and older generations of family members. So my partner and I are currently talking about you know, having a baby, and we are there's a huge source of contention about whether or not to have a C-section or whether or not to have a vaginal birth. I would love to have a vaginal birth just because I'm aware of the risks that are associated with C-sections and kind of the bounce back that women often struggle with after having a C-section and epidural and all of that, versus I see women giving birth vaginally and
they're in the club next week.
Not walking around 2 days later. And he's very adamant. He's like, no, you're 40, you're high risk, you need to have a C-section. And of course, that all of that may be true, but you know, there is a dynamic that is constantly between men and women who are having, you know, people often say, we're having a baby, I'm having a baby, and you are supporting me in having this child. And so I'm just curious to see, do you see a lot of that dynamic coming up where men often feel like they're imposing their ways on how women should give birth and the type of parents they should be?
That's an interesting one. I think from our perspective in our line of work, we do see a lot of women or birthing people on their own a lot of the time. And part of the reason for that is because there isn't yet what we call parity of esteem between physical health and mental health. So the non-birthing partner often prioritizes going to the physical health appointments like scans, rather than coming to appointments for a prospective mother or parent's mental health. So for me personally, right, we do see partners sometimes, but it's much less common than seeing the woman, unless it's like a pre-planned meeting where we specifically ask them to bring a partner or a supporter. But we do hear women kind of referring to ideas that their partner has kind of been talking about, which may be slightly at odds with what they want. It can be difficult. Because women obviously, they want to meet the expectations of whoever is around them. There is, you know, it is a collaborative process if you have a partner and you decide to have a child together. But 100%, you are taking on the physical risk.
The risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the, I wouldn't say the mental or the psychological side of it is only with the birthing partner. Because we do know more and more now that there is such a thing as kind of postpartum depression in men. We might use different words eventually to describe it, but it has been noted, and we certainly see it as well, that often when the mother is struggling, or if there has been a particularly traumatic birth, that the partner or father often does also struggle. We could go into a lot of conversation about why men find it so difficult. And often when their partner's struggling, they can at times become even worse because they feel they need to be stoic. And so the woman might eventually get help from us, but the partner might never get any help. But we're talking about Black women, so I won't go into the partners too much.
I was listening to a podcast and the guy was saying that he felt envious of the baby when the baby was born, of like his baby with his partner when the baby was born, because his partner was obviously basically doting on the baby and like always with the baby and like neglecting what he would call like his, or what he was calling his needs. And you know, you were talking about a minute ago about like the idea of like always picking up the child, always picking up the child. The mom, being her first child, was always like trying to pick up the child every time the baby would cry, and was doing it to a ratio that I guess the dad felt even more left out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just an interesting podcast listening, because he was basically talking about why he feels disconnected to his baby, but also began to resent his wife when they had a baby together, despite it being something that they both shared, because ultimately he wasn't carrying the baby. And he was saying there needs to be more conversations when it comes to the experience of being a dad and having a baby. And kind of going back to what you said, Lee, about like that, he was saying the reverse of what you said. So he was like, it's not my baby, it is our baby. So I think that there's definitely a disconnect there between the two genders.
Yeah.
There's definitely a disconnect.
Well, it's one of the things that I wanted to ask, and you know, a lot of times we talk about mental health, as you said, after it happens. Or, you know, maybe even when we're in the moment, or, you know, are there things that we can do as women, or things that we should be cognizant of to be preventative, you know, to prevent us from having postpartum? Or
absolutely. You know, before I go into that, I want to just mention, to your point, Roshan, about kind of partners or husbands sometimes feeling, you know, why sometimes they can feel left out, resentment, all of that. It's important to kind of understand that kind of touch that women, you know, women are, or the birthing partner is often getting a lot of their need for touch, need for physical affection, not sexual intimacy, obviously, but affection from the new baby. And depending on the structure of the family, what's happening, if the non-birthing partner is out at work all day, they're not actually getting those, you know, the mother doesn't really necessarily have the capacity at the end of the day to now be offering lots of hugs and cuddles and kisses to their partner. And so, you know, it can really feel like a deficit. And there's so much that is affected in the relationship that we don't really think about sometimes before it happens. But talking about what you can prepare for, there is so much that people don't really consider or think about when it comes to preparing mentally for bringing another child into the world. I guess all the physical stuff is important as well. And most people do have some consideration of, you know, wanting to improve their kind of physical fitness to a reasonable degree. You know, we know that obese mothers have worse outcomes, and so it's important to try and maintain a healthy weight. Look at our nutrition on the other end of the scale, if we have been nutrition depleted for some reason, to kind of work on that. So people do tend to be aware of that and do that, you know, looking at stopping smoking, stopping drinking. I think all these things are kind of widely understood. When it comes to mental health, it's a little bit different. I think there's sometimes a false expectation that becoming a mother, if it's something that I really, really want, is going to mean that without doing anything else, my mental health will be much better. And sadly, that's very untrue. In fact, the opposite is true. So women are at the most vulnerable in terms of their mental health during the perinatal period, which is during their pregnancy and the first year or two after they deliver. If they do become unwell, it's sometimes much more severe than it has been outside of that period. And they may have also decided to stop medications because they feel that they need to protect their baby from exposures. And in doing so, they may have actually increased their risk of becoming unwell even further. Not to mention all the stuff we just talked about, you know, challenges with relationships, with partners, with in-laws, with, you know, parents and grandparents trying to tell you what to do, being, you know, maybe having financial difficulties because you're, you know, on maternity leave, you've got low pay, you know, all of those things are happening, which are going to predispose you to stress and mental ill health, as well as kind of the, what we now know is kind of the effect of the hormones on your mental health. So I would strongly recommend to people to just spend some time thinking about, you know, their own mental health, where they're at the moment, and considering with their GP whether there's anything they can do to optimize their mental health, either before they've become pregnant or if they're already pregnant, during the pregnancy. It's never too late to start.
You know, when you look at the data of women who are who experience things like postnatal depression or other mental health challenges that come with being a mother or their pregnancy, is it typically women that have pre-existing mental health diagnoses?
That's a fantastic question. It's a combination. So we know that women who have a history of severe, what we call severe and enduring mental health, some of those big name diagnoses like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, they are at extremely high risk of postpartum psychosis in particular. So that's a condition where you can become very unwell with delusions, paranoia, bizarre behavior, confusion, seeing things, hearing things. That's quite scary, extremely scary for the mum and for the family around them. So that is something that we know is much more common in women or people who have a history of severe mood difficulties or previous psychosis. But pretty much everyone has a reasonable risk of becoming unwell with depression or anxiety. Actually, it's about 25% of mums have some sort of mental health difficulty. It may be very mild, but have some sort of mental health difficulty during the pregnancy or postnatal period. So it's incredibly common.
Is that disproportionately true for Black women? Like, how do Black women fare relative to other women?
Yeah, that's a difficult question to answer, because what we know is that we're not reaching as many Black women as we should. So when it comes to the proportion of women that are being treated, it's not disproportionate in terms of the current caseload. However, we're aware that this is an underserved community for various reasons. We talked about the stigma. We talked about fear of institutionalized racism, ideas that you won't be listened to or respected, or that you'll be referred to children's social care if you let people know that you're struggling with your mental health. So I would say that I don't have a clear answer to that question, but I think we know that Black women are underrepresented in terms of seeking help and may well be overrepresented in terms of the raw numbers who are suffering.
So I was diagnosed with various anxiety disorders. And because of that, I always thought, okay, so when I become a parent, my anxiety is going to be, it's going to decline in terms of like the severity of, or maybe increase is the better way of saying it. Like, it's going to become more severe. It's going to become like hard to manage. It's going to be a nightmare plus a baby. All right. That's literally what I thought. And I feel like, you know, we've spoken honestly about what maternal health is like in this conversation. But I just think for anyone who can kind of relate to that idea of like, you know, they're starting their journey on motherhood, or maybe they are a mom already, or they are pregnant and they have any anxieties or any maybe even misconceptions about what it is. Like, what advice do you have for people like that in regards to approaching motherhood?
My main advice would be that the more honest you are with yourself, the better help you can receive. So like you said, knowing that you have a mental health issue, be it quiescent, be it historical, be it whatever, If you have that little, you know, thing in the back of your mind saying, "Ooh, I hope it doesn't get worse. Maybe it will get worse. Will it get worse?" Just let your midwife know, let your GP know. They're not going to jump to any conclusions. We are now much better at respecting people who have mental health difficulties, and not kind of treating them disproportionately in a different way. The midwifery teams throughout the country are really experienced in supporting people with their mental health. That doesn't necessarily mean doing anything different if it doesn't need to be done, but it usually means making you aware of the services in your local area that you can reach out to. And it may mean having more frequent midwifery appointments, or seeing the same midwife or the same group of midwives every time, which a lot of people don't get a chance to do. And even that can be a really important aspect of managing your anxiety. So I think it's really important to be honest with yourself. That will make it more likely that you'll be able to share your fears with someone else. And most likely you will be able to be reassured. You know, our team exists because we know that women with mental health difficulties of even the very severe type get pregnant, and they can be good parents. And with planning and thinking, we can really, you know, kind of optimize your experience. So kind of staying quiet is most likely going to just lead to you avoiding things and potentially shoring up problems for later down the line.
It's interesting because we've been talking quite a bit about, you know, the experience of women and pregnancy and what women can do to be better advocates for themselves and, you know, what they should be prepared for. I'm also just wondering what work is being done on the other side to make sure that women are having a better experience when they do go into the hospital. So being aware of the fact that, you know, Black women specifically are 3 to 5 times more likely to die due to preventable issues during childbirth and after childbirth, due to issues of access of care, as you've just mentioned, and institutional racism. Is there work being done by the government, by institutions, to do more training for doctors and nurses and midwives? How do we feel more comfortable knowing that when we walk into a doctor's office, that some of that work is being done on their part to make the experience better for us?
I think there is some work happening. You know, some of the campaigns, like 5 Times More, have really got the national interest. There's also been there's a audit on maternal deaths that specifically looks at kind of the ethnic mix of sadly mortality in pregnant women or women who have died in the short period after they've given birth. And so these kind of stats are getting much more attention. And there is now some work that's going on. I know that in my local area, a specialist midwife was appointed strictly to look at initiatives to basically work on anti-racism amongst the professionals in the maternity units, thinking about providing safe spaces for professionals to come and talk about perhaps things that they've witnessed by colleagues that concern them, opportunities to share together and learn together. So these things are really being taken seriously, and they are being monitored. It's not going to make a difference in the very short term, but I think it kind of signals a really important shift for women like us.
Amazing. And just to add to the information, are there any resources that Black women should be looking into if they are pregnant, if they're worried about their maternal health? What are some of the services that we should be looking for, like proactively seeking?
In terms of their mental health, a really good website is the MIND website. So that is a mental health charity, which has a lot of leaflets and information on various mental health conditions. They do have a section on mental health in pregnancy. The Royal College of Psychiatrists website is also a good place. I think it's called rcpsych.org or .co.uk. That's a really good website to, again, get information specifically about how you can get help for your mental health in pregnancy. Most maternity units have, or at least a lot of the ones in London, are associated with apps that you can connect to, which provides detailed information about services available in your local area. And you can kind of have some access to your documents on there, have some access to resources, and kind of plot some of your outcomes and experiences, maybe keep a mood diary in there that you can show your midwife, this sort of thing. So, you know, the technology is coming up as well. But I'm not sure if I have any recommendations specifically for Black mothers to be, apart from talk about it. Speak with your, you know, it's a difficult conversation to start, but speak with your mother, speak with your grandmother, speak with your auntie, ask them what they went through, what wisdom they have to impart. And you may be surprised what they come out with. And don't be afraid to kind of bring some of those stories to your doctors or your midwives and say, look, these are the things that my family has experienced. You know, what do you think we can do to maybe prevent some of these negative experiences from happening to me? Don't hesitate to keep a little notepad when you go in to see clinicians. Bring your partner or a friend or family member for emotional support, and somebody who can listen alongside you, so that if you're like having a difficult day or you just zone out, they at least were also there in the room. And yeah, any questions you have that crop up, write it in your little book and ask it next time you see somebody. And if you don't like the answer that you get, ask the next person that you see. You know, it's don't feel like you're being, you know, this, there's a stereotype of angry Black woman or being difficult, you know. In fact, we generally don't assert ourselves enough. And so, you know, it's just really important to make a noise.
I'd also just add to that as well, that in a similar way that we have the Dope Black Woman Safe Space group, there's also lots of Black parenting and Black mother safe space groups. So I'll put some of them in the description in the box as well for anyone listening. Because you mentioned as one of the examples, you know, like parents and grandparents. And then as you were saying that, I was thinking of like, I know that wasn't the only thing that you mentioned, but I was just thinking about sometimes people don't want to admit to their grandparents or their parents about what they're struggling with, but actually they might prefer to talk to strangers.
So I usually have a fun fact for Roshan and the listeners at the beginning of every episode, but we're going to end with one today, and it's about midwives. So midwives actually means with woman, which I didn't know before. And it is one of the oldest professions in the world. Predominantly Black women were midwives, you know, back in the day, which is unfortunate because apparently there have been less and less Black midwives, you know, in many countries or in many developed countries. So whether we're talking about the US or the UK, they actually represent a smaller portion of midwifery, the midwifery cohort than before. And there's a long history, and we can link a video into this that provides a chronology of midwives being, and Black midwives more importantly, being kind of very critical and integral to the birthing process and the decline of that over the years due to a number of reasons, including institutionalized racism. So we'll put that link in the description of the episode. With a bunch of other resources. I think Jamila mentioned Five Times More. There's an amazing book out by a good friend of mine called Monique Rainford. It's called Pregnant While Black, which provides some resources for women to read. And I think recently, actually, Serena Williams, you know, Shan, you mentioned influencers, but both Serena Williams and Elaine Welteroth have started what is being referred to as the Birth Fund. in partner with an organization called Birth Center Equity. And so more and more Black women are starting to talk about their birthing experiences, their experience with postnatal depression or postpartum depression. Really glad to see that. So definitely support the work that's being done out there now.
Well, thank you for joining us on this episode.
Thank you so much, yes, yet again for having me. It was, yeah, really exciting. I feel privileged to be able to come here and speak to you both and just share a little bit about what I do and hopefully help people to have a much more positive kind of experience with their mental health and their physical health during their pregnancy and postnatal.
Well, you're giving Roshan and I hope that our birthing experiences won't be as horrible as we imagine them to be.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
Guess what?
What?
Sky gave me a 1 month free trial of Sky and Netflix.
Stop.
No, it's true. There's great shows like House of the Dragon and The Regime on Sky and Scoop and Bridgerton on Netflix.
Go on.
You can just say what you want to watch and Sky Stream will find it.
Get out of here.
Seriously, go to sky.com and get your own free trial today. Wait, hang on. Where are you going?
Gotta go. Lots of telly to watch.
New Sky TV customers only. Requires Sky Ultimate TV subscription and minimum broadband speed 25 megabits per second. £31 per month after trial unless cancelled. Terms apply.